ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. Today, my guest is Rohit Bhargava, a trend curator, marketing expert, storyteller, and Wall Street Journal bestselling author of 5 books, including Non-Obvious and Likeonomics. His first book, Personality Not Included, won the prestigious Gold Atticus Award and is still widely cited as a favorite of executive leaders and CEOs around the world for its groundbreaking ideas on leadership, branding, and personality. His personal influential marketing blog has been featured in global media and named one of the top 25 marketing blogs in the world by Ad Age magazine. After spending 15 years leading brand strategy at Ogilvy and Leo Burnett, Rohit left the corporate world to become an entrepreneur. He's the founder of multiple companies, including the Influential Marketing Group and Idea Press Publishing. He's regularly interviewed and featured as an expert commentator in global media, including Harvard Business Review, The Guardian, and NPR. Rohit, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
There's so much to talk about that I'm not really even sure where to start. Trend predictions, which are mostly wrong, and how to fix it, and how to predict the future, why big ideas don't work, how to be more authentic. I hate that word, by the way, even though everybody's all into it. Why some brands are leaders and are loved and others aren't. But you have a new book out, so I think we should start there. Non-obvious, how to think different, curate ideas, and predict the future. So let's start with trends, and specifically the non-obvious ones and how to spot non-obvious things, which seems a bit of a trick. So first of all, how would you define a trend then? How are you defining that?
So my definition of a trend is a curated observation of the accelerating present. And I think the important part of that is the accelerating present, because a lot of times when people think about trends or they think about these so-called futurists, they're people who somehow look 30 years into the future and basically guess about things like flying cars and all sorts of cool stuff that may or may not come true. And my approach is a little bit different because I basically look at what's happening right now. And the trend prediction part of it is that this is going to happen with more frequency and it's going to change how we do business. And therefore, it's a trend and it's worth paying attention to.
So it's really observation is a pretty key part of that, right? I mean,
it's huge. Yeah. And I think that we live in a world where it's easy to be observationally mute. You kind of sit there and you can just read what you agree with and you sort of only pay attention to the same kind of media and you walk down the street kind of looking at your phone.
That is the signature of our time, isn't it?
I mean, it is.
We have been empowered to be observationally mute.
We are. And so, you know, we're stuck and we don't have any new input. And so we don't come up with new ideas. It's garbage in and garbage out, right? I mean, how can you be innovative and think about new stuff when you just read the same old thing from people who agree with you?
Absolutely. Or just the same ideas, the same things. And so by curating it, you're really looking at the broad picture and pulling together meaning, what has meaning. Would that be fair?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I spend the entire year basically every year and I do a new report every year. So I do what sometimes I describe as the dumbest thing any author can do, which is I rewrite the same book. I rewrite 35% of it every year because I introduce 15 brand new trends every December. And the reason why I do that is because the pace of everything changes so quickly. And every year I spend so much time gathering all of these insights and stories, and I get to interview amazing people at events, and I speak at all of these places where I get to see some of these really, really smart people on stage. And so I'm lucky to get to experience all of that. And the report is my attempt to curate an entire year's worth of story gathering and insights and interviews and everything into what are the intersections that relate to these 15 trends. And so the ultimate output is 15 trends.
I see. And then one of the things I thought was interesting looking at the summaries from year to year, how things are gradually shifting. I found that pretty interesting. But just if I'm a leader and I've read your book and so I see that, but how can I in my own world start becoming a trend curator? Are there things that I need to apply, habits, behaviors?
Absolutely. Of course. Right? Otherwise, why write a book about it, right?
So I've teed it up for you.
Yeah, I like that. That's you obviously have been doing this for long enough. So I like that. So one of the things that I tell people, which is a little bit counterintuitive to, I think, what they hear from a lot of people who do trend prediction, is that I really think anybody has the ability to do this. This is not the domain of certain experts who've studied something and therefore are uniquely qualified to tell you what the future is going to be. Instead, I think it's something that we all can do. And so actually in the book, I talk about five habits, and we've already talked about the first one, which is be observant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't be lazy. Like, look around, pick your head up.
Stop looking at your phone.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the other ones are maybe a little bit more surprising. That one is probably not too surprising for most people. But I also tell people to be fickle. And fickle is an interesting word because we don't tend to think that's a good thing. I mean, when you're too fickle, like, you can't be loyal to stuff. You move on too quickly. You have ADHD. But being fickle when it comes to ideas means that you can save something and move on and not dwell on it for too long, because sometimes the value of it only comes through time. And that's a big thing that I teach to people, which is we are generally, I mean, anybody who's listening to this podcast is a smart person. Right? They're an intellectual
person. I like to
think
so.
Yeah, like, otherwise they'd be sitting on their couch watching Real Housewives, right?
Yeah. Or, well, like, you can't criticize programming, but, you know,
well,
everything has its place. You can,
yeah.
But I'm
yeah,
not.
Right. I mean, you know, or whatever, insert whatever show you know, doesn't have value there. It doesn't have to be that show, right? But, you know, the idea is that we're trying to get better. We're trying to get smarter. Right. And so I think that anybody who's in that sort of category has a lot of ideas. The problem is, for a lot of us, we don't have a great way of saving our ideas in a way that's useful. And so we lose our best ideas.
Hmm.
And that's the worst possible thing, because you have a great idea and then you lose it. Like, it's almost better to not have the idea in the first place. So one of the first things I teach to people is, how do you capture your best ideas in a way that you don't lose them? You can return to them, because I can find things that I wrote down in January of last year, and I can relate that to something that I saw yesterday. And therefore, I make the connection and I say, oh, here's a story, here's an example, here's some research, here's an interview. Put all of those five things together. That's the curation. That's where the trend comes from.
But how do you make it not noisy? I mean, if I'm saving things from January, there's a lot of stuff there. How does it – there's a method, I'm sure. Tell me the method.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, the first thing – where it starts with for me is – that I have to have a centralized way of collecting information. So for me, it's actually a very physical way of collecting stuff. So I rip articles out of magazines. I print stuff off of the internet. I have a little notebook that's about the size of a passport that I always carry with me in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
I have this kind of method where I put these little boxes next to any notes that I take. And inside the box, I put some sort of keyword so that I can skim my notes quickly and see every book that someone recommended to me, for example, because the word book is in a square next to that on my notes. And so I file my notes in that way, and I know that there's Evernote, and I know there's people who are like, man, I can't believe you're so old that you do it in that way, right?
You know, it's funny, though, because I like that way, because I am that way myself. And I find there's something about having the physical thing and moving it, which makes me – the tactileness of it makes me remember better for some reason.
There's a very human element to that. And people tend to think, oh, you know, you're old if you write stuff down and you're young if you just do it all digitally. But that discounts how our brains work, because sometimes you're right. We need to physically see this stuff spread out. And so that's what I actually do. I physically spread this stuff out. And in the book, there's actually a couple of photos of what my table – house that my kids, you know, they call the Thanksgiving room table because we use it once a year for Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah.
That table is just taken over with all this stuff. And then I show people what that looks like.
Right. Oh, man. So we're observant, we're curious, we're fickle, and we're doing it, we're collecting these things. And if, wait a minute, that's only, you said you had five.
So yeah, that's curious. Three. So the other two.
Sorry, keeping us on task.
I like it. The fourth one is being thoughtful. So that's taking time to think, which is not that easy sometimes, because we have to intentionally sort of stop the email flood from coming in and just say, okay, I'm going to think about this. So sometimes I'll use like long flights, for example, to do that. And I will not go on my computer and I'll just actually write stuff and think about connections and things like that. So being thoughtful.
So it's really making a concerted effort to be thoughtful, to not just sort of zone out, but to not be in the swim of your everyday life? And instead, are you, when you're being thoughtful, are you flipping through that notebook that you have in your pocket? Or is this, it's just sort of a brain riff that you're doing? What does that thoughtful time look like? And how frequently are you engaging in it?
It is, sometimes it is flipping through the notebook. Sometimes it's physically moving magazine stories around on my table and kind of grouping things together and stapling them or unstapling them. So it's a very physical thing sometimes. And other times I'll just have a blank sheet of paper and I'll just kind of think about stuff. What I don't have is, you know, I'm not the sort of person where it's like, okay, every Friday at 4 p.m., I'm going to be thoughtful, right? Like that doesn't work for me because it depends on the day and I move stuff around. And so for me, it's just when I kind of feel like I'm maybe getting overwhelmed or I feel like, okay, now's the time where I need to think about it. Or because I write this book every year, I mean, there's a definite time of the calendar year where I start to sift through all of this information because I'm through with the gathering phase and I'm into the curation and analysis phase.
During the curation and analysis phase, how do you glean? Are these things that you're naming, you're creating these things, or are you picking up on names and descriptions and ideas that other people have put into the swim and you're just collecting them? Is this, are you synthesizing something wholly new, or is it some of both?
The aim is to synthesize something totally new. And so I do name every trend. And actually, the last habit in the five that I didn't mention is be elegant. And so when I'm naming the trends, I'm really kind of taking my English major from many years ago and using what I learned in poetry class, which is to choose words very intentionally for how these trends are named. And part of the idea is that because I'm a branding guy, I've spent most of my career in kind of agencies and doing branding and marketing. And so every trend that's predicted in the report is branded to be described in such a way that that'll be memorable for people.
So why, if I'm a leader and I'm trying to be a trend watcher in my own universe, why would being elegant, why would that final piece matter to me?
It's not usually described as, the word people use is not elegant, but the word people do use often is simple or simplified.
Ah, right.
And elegance to me is about simplifying ideas in a way that makes them easier to understand. And I think any leader who's trying to communicate anything completely understands the value of being simple with what they say. Right. Not overly simplified, but simple enough that people get it and they understand why. And elegant to me is a slightly more branded way of being simple, which is that you can be simple, but you don't have to use kindergarten language in order to be simple. You can be elegant with how you describe something.
Well, it's sometimes where it's a very nice way of saying sort of the complexity, because simple often, as you say, implies a lack of complexity, whereas elegant is, I'm trying to think of another word, but you picked the best one. So there you go. And what a nice segue into some of your 2017 culture and consumer behavior trends, desperate detox and simplicity, right?
Yes. That's, yep.
What we're seeing, this sort of Marie Kondo thing, right? Getting rid of the clutter, yep. Addictive technology. Now, how does this culture and consumer behavior then, if my audience consists primarily of entertainment marketers, branders, people working at networks, how does this detox trend impact them? How can, if this trend is coming there, and I think you're right, and parents are concerned about their children being too plugged in, and yet everybody wants desperately to get those young children's minds, you know, into their programming. So how do we onboard this trend to not be on board?
Yeah, it's interesting because sometimes when I talk about this trend, people think it's very anti-technology, which is, you know, when you say consumers want a desperate detox, the first thing to think is, oh, they're going to these summer camps where they take their cell phone and they kind of lock it in the locker for 3 days just to be without their technology because we just need time away from it. But actually what's happened with this trend is technology is becoming an enabler to detox your life. So if you think about like in the media entertainment space, Netflix licensing National Firewood Night and this whole Norwegian TV programming that was popular only in Norway until Netflix picked it up. And it's basically a 12-hour marathon of an image of a fireplace and nothing else. And you just sit there and you watch the fireplace. And slowly, if you ever actually watch this, like not only do you get a sense of calm, but like that moment 5.5 hours into this program where someone sticks the rod in and kind of moves the wood around, that's exciting because something happened. And that,
I don't know. I think that's
media,
a stretch.
Like,
I mean, that's like start a fire in your fireplace, people. I don't know.
if you sit there, and I get that it's hard to believe. I totally get it. And I have not sat there and watched it for 5 hours, but I have sat there and watched it for half an hour.
Really?
And I will tell you, yeah. And I will tell you that if you just kind of sit there and watch this thing where really nothing's happening, it's a different experience. It really is. Now, I'm not saying everybody does that, but the point is, this is a different kind of media than we had ever talked about. Now, more kind of approachable maybe version of that is Wired Magazine, for example, has a section of their website called wired.com/longreads, and it's their longest articles. Because part of what people sometimes think when it comes to media is, oh, we're just looking at the sensationalist BuzzFeed, you know, 12 celebrities who used to be hot and are now ugly, you know, right. Like, and that's all that people are looking at. But sometimes when we have time, there are a lot of people who would love to read a beautifully written, well-researched piece of journalism. And Wired is trying to tap into those people by saying, look, go to this section, read our long stories, some of which are 4 years old, but that's okay, because a story of an amazing Mexican teacher who found a new way to teach math and is winning all kinds of awards, that's sort of evergreen.
Right. Sure. I see that. Another one of the things that you highlighted was fierce femininity. And I'm curious as to whether the current political landscape has changed that at all, or do you still really feel that, I mean, it almost feels like there was a moment, but then there's been a certain amount of backlash. And is that still, are we still feeling as confident about fierce femininity?
Yeah,
I can't even pronounce that, fierce femininity.
So there's a couple of things in this one, right? One is that the name of the trend puts two words together that you don't usually see together, which is fierce and femininity. And that's kind of the point to your question, like, because this was obviously written before the election results.
Right.
But I do think that this is still a major thing, because even though the election turned out how it turned out, you can still look at plenty of media and see that this idea of the princess being rescued from the tower is not really how media goes anymore. I mean, Rogue One, Ghostbusters, teen-oriented shows like Bella and the Bulldogs. I mean, the girl is the quarterback. She's the superstar. She's kicking butt. She's saving the guy. I mean, that's the essence of fierce femininity, and that doesn't just go away because of one election.
Right. But is there a backlash? As a mother of boys, I say, you know, it's distressing sometimes that there isn't, you know, I guess it's a pendulum swing thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a dad of two boys myself, and so I definitely see that. I mean, there is more attention on girls in media right now. And so there are plenty of media critics who are worried, and you've probably read the same things I have. They're worried that boys are getting left behind.
Well, certainly in terms of how they're being engaged and what would be traditionally masculine behaviors being pejoratively valued, mm-hmm. if you will. It's an interesting, anyway, that's a soul side story there. won't go down that particular rabbit hole. Now, looking at marketing and social media trends, I thought passive loyalty was interesting. And could you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, passive loyalty was based on me just seeing in so many different industries. And, you know, by the way, most of these trends, a lot of times what we'll read is, when we read about trends at the end of the year, is these are the financial services trends and these are the, you know, healthcare trends.
Right.
And my approach is very intentionally not to do industry verticals specifically, but instead look at trends that have examples across verticals.
Yes.
And so, yeah, so consumer behavior, which you mentioned, is one of the five categories of trends that I have in the book. Marketing and social media is another of those five categories. And each one of those categories bridges across industries. Right. And that's kind of the point. And so passive loyalty as a trend was one that I was seeing in many industries based on the fact that customers that would be easy to describe as loyal were actually not loyal. They're just passively loyal. And when something else comes along, they switch right away. And the kind of ultimate example of that I think we're all bombarded with is the cell phone companies that are blasting you with, you know, we'll pay up to $650 for you to switch.
Right.
And so loyalty in that industry is very, very hard to find, because as soon as you want the new phone or you have some sort of issue, switch, no problem, no loyalty. And what it raises for a lot of these companies is, okay, well, if we have these customers who maybe have been a customer for 5 years, and so we think that they're loyal, but actually they just haven't found anything better to come along. And as soon as they do, they switch. So how do we move them from passively loyal to actively loyal?
Well, what is it that engages them? What is it that makes somebody loyal? And is it simply inertia?
Yeah. And, you know, and what does loyalty actually mean, right? Because you can be loyal out of convenience, or you can be loyal out of actually caring about a brand.
Ah, yes, true. And that's sort of like, do you love a brand or do you just simply like it? Are you listening to music or are you hearing music? Mm-hmm. How active are you as a participant? And certainly that's one of the things that's interesting, again, with media and entertainment in that particular vertical, because it really is becoming more and more about the program rather than the channel. And so where's the program, you know? And
right.
how are you going to get it? And certainly with the young millennials, we have a lot of piracy because they don't care. Absolutely. They're not, you know, as long as there's still a program, they don't really think about if you pirate, then there won't be any money, then there won't be any content, and all you'll have is YouTube, and that would be depressing.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, and you think about like, you know, yeah, and loyalty when it comes to media and entertainment in particular, right? So if you think about like how movies are being promoted or how shows are increasingly being promoted, one of the things that people want to see in order to drive that loyalty is they want the behind the scenes look. They want to see that the actors actually like each other. They want to see, you know, what went into some of the filming. And part of it is this deep sort of psychological insight that you believe in something much more when you see how it's made. And the perfect example of that is at the end of every Jackie Chan movie, what do you see? You see him crashing into the wall and messing up the stunt that you saw him do perfectly in the actual movie.
Right.
And when you see that, you realize, oh, wow, this actually took a lot of work. And this guy's really talented. And he slams his body into the wall and he is, you know, walking around in freezing temperature with a t-shirt on. And you respect what he was able to do in the film so much more because you get that scene.
Well, right. That's
it.
Like the classic thing with street performers. The juggler will drop something. So you realize that they can't. And then you're more inclined to watch it. I also think it's interesting, authentic fame seekers. And that seems to me, how can you be authentic and yet curate yourself?
Yeah, that's the ultimate oxymoron, isn't it? I mean, being authentic, even though we kind of generally hate that word because it's so overused, right?
Absolutely.
But if I described you as being authentic, yeah, that's not a bad thing. We want to be authentic. We just the word's overused. But if I described you as a fame seeker, that would be negative, right? We don't want to be seen as a fame seeker.
Right.
But now there's this whole generation, and it's sort of typified perfectly by the YouTube stars, of people who have these huge followings because of their willingness to candidly share aspects of their life that most people wouldn't. And even to the point of the Kardashians and explaining the popularity of some of those sisters, which seems like the most fake thing you could ever do. I mean, every selfie is totally contrived and totally fake. The fact is they're taking their fans into the background of their lives in a way that most people would be uncomfortable doing. And you could easily... Yeah, sorry, go
ahead. Are they being authentic or are they being spectacular? Because I think there's also, I mean, I almost think there's that, you know, there was that dust up around, and I'm going to butcher his name, PewDie or whatever.
PewDiePie, yeah.
That, you know the one.
Uh-huh.
His whole blow up where he, I would say he's more authentic and then ran afoul of it, as opposed to them where it's you're right in that it's behind the scenes, but with a lot of, like with a lot of reality TV, it is contrived and glamorous. And it's almost sort of the way you had Busby Berkeley spectaculars during the Depression, that if people, it speaks to some of the disenchantment in the country, I think, that you have this desire for conspicuous consumption and gaudiness and spectacular, you know, you have a gold-plated president or what have you, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that this kind of confronts our biases when it comes to what is authentic, right? Because just because somebody is shallow, right, and contrived with what they do, and exactly like you describe the Kardashians, which is how I would describe them as well, but that seems to be authentically who they are, right? I mean,
yeah,
this is not
true.
A show.
That's
like, this
true.
Seems
I
to actually
to be
them,
fair. This,
right?
You're right. You're right. And wow, what does that reveal about me and my views? True, true, true.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have to trim that section, Nick. I don't know. wow, true. You're right. It may be a spectacular, but it's an authentic spectacular. If we were looking at last year, looking at your marketing and social media trends and personality mapping and branded utility were things from last year in marketing and social media, how do they relate to this year's trends? I mean, do you see linkages between last year and this year?
I do. And in fact, you know, because I've been doing this for 7 years, I see often there are links between years. And actually, one of the things I started doing last year is I would take trends that I'd previously predicted, and 5 of the 15 trends are actually previously predicted trends that have accelerated to a point where either they've changed somehow or they've just become so important that they're worth bringing back. And so I don't do that every year. So for example, in the 2017 report, I will never bring a 2016 trend because it's too recent.
I see. Okay.
But I'll bring a trend from 2015 or earlier back.
Now I'm flipping to 2015.
Yeah.
Everyday stardom, selfie confidence, mainstream mindfulness, those things are sort of related. Yeah, I see that. That's interesting.
Yeah, and you'll see that, you know, some of them are, you know, are sort of an evolution. So you'll see something, for example, come through like back in, let me see if I can look at this. So back in 2013, I had a trend called Powered by Women. And that was kind of more business oriented. And it was about women taking more of a leadership role in business. And it wasn't as much cultural as it was business. And that evolved from Powered by Women in 2013 to now in 2017, Fierce Femininity.
Right.
So you can kind of see an evolution between those. I mean, they're certainly linked, but they're not the same.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, back to that, what's interesting is I think we're at such a pressure point on the that point, like the report about the woman who worked at Uber, you know, and for me as a professional woman, wasn't surprised at all by any of it, you know, and I anticipate that there'll be a certain amount of hand-wringing. We'll probably see some, you know, task forces to address this horrible issue, and nothing will really change. I mean, that's my very cynical view. But perhaps by having fierce femininity in the role models, heroines, things like that, that by changing that aspect of culture, it will then feed into an acceptance of women in workplace leadership roles and create something different. Maybe that's the way things are going to actually change.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when you say, like Uber is a great example, right? So there's all of this, you know, they have their investigator and they're going to do this and they're going to do that apparently. And, you know, maybe nothing really will change in terms of the organization. But the one thing that I think will definitely change is how easy or difficult it is for them to recruit more female talent to actually want to work there, right? Now, you could say, well, maybe that's not a priority for them in the first place, which is the problem. But getting good people is a priority for everyone. And when you have issues that cause you to not be a great place for people to want to work, especially when you think about millennials and how concerned and focused they are on working at a place that shares their view of the world or their beliefs.
Right.
That's big.
Right. Well, I think certainly having it out there, the bad press is bad because that will affect not only the men who, you know, it, obviously the women are going to be affected, but the men as well are going to be like, I, you know, if I have a choice, maybe I don't go there. Maybe that's not where I want to go. Although you could also argue that the culture, why did this happen at that workplace? Because of leadership and what was rewarded or not rewarded. I mean, you know, HR people aren't part of the profit center and they're going to follow where the money and profit center directs them to. So
yeah,
there's fundamentally a culture issue there at the very top. That would be my, having no exposure to any of them, my, you know, analysis from a distance is there's something in the culture at the very top, which allowed this and to continue pretty pervasively.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, we tend to think, oh, maybe this is new, but the cultural cues for an organization have always come from the leaders, you know? I mean, even to the point where, like, if you see the boss sitting at the desk at 8:30 p.m., like, that's the work culture. And so, you know, we shouldn't be surprised that, like, you know, if this guy's kind of, if he's that way in his personal life and that's his attitude, then of course that's going to come through in the organization.
Right. It's rewarding the nasty top performer. You know, because they're a top performer, that's what you're valuing. You know, it's every behavior, what's rewarded is noted and it's seen rather than whatever the language is, whatever the phrasing is, that's sort of what's going to inform your culture. Are there any other trends that we should talk about? I mean, I'm running out of time, so I want to know what other things have I missed that I need to address before we completely wrap.
I think one that may be kind of interesting for your audience was one that's just kept coming back for me over and over, which is something I called lovable unperfection. And that was really a trend around this idea that we as consumers and individuals prefer often to see something that's flawed because it feels more genuine as a result of it being flawed. And so that has big implications when you think about the way that we promote our products or the way that we talk about our organizations and our workplace cultures and not being afraid to screw things up.
Right. As long as you own it, admit it, it goes to authenticity, correct? I mean, the genuineness of it.
Yeah, and just the fact that you look at products like Uggs or Crocs, I mean, these are not good-looking footwear, and yet the people who wear them love them.
Charismatic, ugly, yes.
It really kind of is. You know, it's like the ugly sweater parties. Like, we love them because of the quirkiness of them, right? And I think that there is something in that that's a powerful message for anyone to think about leveraging in the way that they promote what they do.
That's interesting. That is interesting. I like that. All right. Well, one little fun game at the very end, since we've covered our time with you, is I like to go through a series of words and just get your top of mind reaction. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Whatever first comes to mind.
Okay.
Facebook.
Overused.
Google.
Useful.
Snapchat.
Confusing.
Twitter.
Oversimplified.
YouTube.
Entertaining.
Ad blockers.
Desperate.
Art.
Insightful.
VR.
Potential.
AR.
Overview or overall, I think.
AI.
Exciting.
Well, it's funny because my next question was, what excites you? So there you go. You're like mind reading me.
I know. It's great, right?
Crazy.
It's almost like we rehearsed this.
But we didn't, honest.
I know. We didn't. Yes, I should
see, we're being authentic.
Yeah,
we didn't
that's
do
right.
that. Lastly, though, if people are interested in finding out more about you and also purchasing your book, where should they go?
My website is probably the best way to get pretty much everything. It's rohitbhargava.com. So I'm sure you'll give them the spelling for that. So
yep,
I know it's not the easiest name to spell.
It's on the site. So people can link to it from the podcast site. Fantastic.
Yeah, there's videos there. There's excerpts of books. And I do a weekly email of interesting stories that comes out every Thursday morning. So if you just like to get one email
to sign up to that.
Yeah, of underappreciated stories that people often miss, but are valuable.
Ooh, so I'm going to sign up.
Every Thursday morning. So.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah,
awesome.
Thank you.
Well, we've reached the end of another episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who have helped bring the program to life. First, the incomparable voice artist, my friend, Rob Naughton. Thank you. Our production team over at Microfame Media, a big thank you. And thank you to our guest and new friend, Rohit Bhargava. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.